A guaranteed way to ensure something never passed. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you here, Barry, and you're sounding good with your new equipment, so we're really happy with that.
Yes, we are, as a matter of fact. And Chuck, I've got a lot to be happy about today because, well, some of our listeners may know this. It's probably not getting reported too far and wide unless you happen to be a member of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association or are a member of Ohioans for Educational Freedom or with a couple other groups. And some of you out there, you might not think this is such great news. And if so, I'm sorry for you now, and I apologize if we offend you, but we're going to tell it like it is. On Tuesday, Chuck, the United States Senate brought a resolution to the floor of the United States Senate, and that resolution was to formally ratify the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Now, that sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? That we're going to have a convention, in other words, a treaty, ladies and gentlemen, because that's what a UN convention is. It's a treaty among the United Nations and their various countries to somehow unify or normalize the way persons with disabilities are treated across the world, as the UN believes that they're speaking for the entire world. This is a convention, a treaty that President Obama wants to see happen. But the big problem, though, Chuck, with this treaty is that in its provisions would be things that would take away the rights of parents in relation to their children. Now, you kind of have to think, what does a treaty that deals with people with disabilities have to do with parents bringing their children up? Well, that's what we'd like to know, too, because this is how the United Nations moves agendas when they can't get them done any other way. You see, they've tried to pass in the past or bring to the United States the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. And that has met with resounding resistance, overwhelming negativity, and the rejection by at least two administrations of that particular convention being ratified in the United States. Well, let's just tack it on to a convention that will get the support of disabled people, whether that be the disabled veterans, whether that just be many of the disability support organizations, many of whom were campaigning strongly to have this convention adopted by the Senate, because in order for a treaty to take effect in the United States by our Constitution, it not only has to get the approval of the president, but it has to be supported by a vote of two-thirds of the members of the United States Senate.
Well, that's right, Barry. And the fact is, this didn't even come close. It got 61-38 vote, 61, and it was defeated 61-38. It didn't even get near a majority, a simple majority. The fact is that all UN treaties are essentially sovereignty grabs. There is no such thing as there should be no such thing as a UN treaty. The fact is that these are international agreements. They virtually all include provisions that require the United States of America to surrender some of its sovereignty to the United Nations. And in fact, that's what this treaty did. This treaty essentially placed decisions having to do with the quote-unquote rights of the disabled into an international body who would then, once they had been given this sovereignty, would then push for the right to dictate what would happen with any, I don't want to say legislation, because legislation is out of the question once you surrender your sovereignty to the United Nations.
Absolutely.
It would become regulatory. What it would do was that the executive branch would get regulatory authority and would be then not just obeying the orders of the President of the United States. The President of the United States would be obeying the orders of the United Nations. Now, if you think I'm taking that too far, then you don't know what you're talking about, because that's exactly what these UN treaties do. We are required by this agreement because of Article 6. Now, we'll make this clear later on, but Article 6 says that all treaties signed become the highest law of the land. Now, remember that the wording of Article 6 is such that all treaties made pursuant to the Constitution become the highest law of the land. And in fact, the International Treaty for the Rights of the Disabled, is not made pursuant to the Constitution. It's not even close. Essentially, it would require that the state or the federal government pay for any disabled child to have one-on-one supervision, quote-unquote, in a public setting. In other words, a school or a university or in a job. And that person would have to be paid for by the federal government or the state government. And, of course, you and I both know what would happen. That would be an unfunded mandate, and the state would be left holding the bag. And the state would, of course, leave the counties holding the bag. And eventually, somebody's going to have to pay for it. And that would leave the UN saying, well, we'd pay for it, but we don't have a revenue stream, so you're going to have to provide a revenue stream for us.
Well, exactly.
And, I mean, I'm getting far afield from here, but you can see how the tentacles come out. The tentacles come out and wrap around things, and suddenly you have the UN screaming, saying, we need an international tax to pay for the enforcement of these things.
Well, of course.
There's all kinds of these things out there floating around, Barry, and this was just one in a string of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, the UN Small Arms Treaty, Kyoto Treaty, which was a UN-based boondoggle having to do with carbon cap and trade and that kind of stuff, based on a false premise, and that is that global warming is caused by man, when in fact it's caused by what has always caused the globe to warm, and that's the sun.
Well, exactly. Now, Chuck, I want to kind of go into this treaty just a little bit, because there has to have been something more to it, ladies and gentlemen. I think Chuck's right, because it's the things that are not spelled out in it that are interesting. According to proponents on the Senate floor, including United States Senator John Kerry, who most likely will become the next United States Secretary of State when Hillary Clinton steps down in January, and who was leading the speeches for the proponents of this bill. Now, Chuck, when we look at that 61-38, that was 61 in favor, 38 opposed. This bill needed 67 votes in order to gain ratification. So it was a lot closer than it looked, but frankly, enough members of the United States Senate, especially on the Republican side, held their ground and kept this thing from becoming our next supreme piece of law of the land. Because, you know, as Article 6 says, that treaties made pursuant to the Constitution, this one wouldn't have been. But of course, since people aren't paying attention to the limited powers of the Constitution of Congress, then yeah, all bets are off on that. But they said that the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities would not create any new rights that don't already exist under U.S. law and would not require changes to existing legislation. The question is, why bother to bring it up and pass it anyway? Why is it so important if it does nothing to change the position of how Americans deal with persons with disabilities and what services they're provided and what access that they're granted? I mean, in 1990, we passed the Americans with Disabilities Act, and so this would make no changes to that, and it would change nothing. And according to John Kerry, oh, it wouldn't give any access to the courts by people. It wouldn't change American law. It offers no recourse. Well, I think maybe he slipped on that one. Maybe that's the problem. It offers no recourse. He says, how's it possible that such a treaty could threaten anybody in our country? Well, my question is, why is it necessary to pass such a treaty if it does nothing?
It's funny you say that, because the first thing that came to my mind, especially when I read some of the comments on the article that I read this in, by the way, I apologize for missing the vote. You're right. It was 61-38 in favor.
Yes.
Needing 67 to pass. Actually, I think it needed 66 because there were only 99 present.
Yeah, but it still needs 67 because it needs just over a two-thirds majority.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. It's a super majority of 67.
Yeah, you're right. In any case, what was the big yank? If this thing isn't going to change anything, then why the big yank? Why the big PR move? Why roll Bob Dole out of a hospital bed in a wheelchair?
I'm serious. And that's the piece I was referring to in our opener. If you're going to do something to try to ensure that your Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities is not going to survive, bring to those Republican senators one of the most sterling examples of how much failure the Republican Party has had by following people like Bob Dole. I mean, Bob Dole lost hugely to Bill Clinton and started the Republican downslide. in Congress. And I think, honestly, that one was, even though they wheeled him out of a hospital that he'd just been in 6 days ago and brought him in a wheelchair with his wife, also former U.S. Senator Elizabeth Dole. That nepotism thing just doesn't work anymore, I don't suppose, Jack. But they wheel him in there, and John Kerry points to him to basically browbeat the Republicans on how, you know, how could you go against your fellow Republican Bob Dole? Well, maybe because most of them realize that it was the Bob Doles of the Republican Party who put them in the mess that they're in the first place. And if we're ever going to get this country back and we're ever going to uphold the Constitution, we got to stop listening to people like Bob Dole.
Yeah, you really, Barry, you have to learn to discern when you start thinking about these things. The real question is, when everybody is being so defensive, don't worry, nothing bad can happen. It can't possibly happen. The law's already there. We're not going to change a thing. We just have to sign this treaty handing all this power over to the UN. You have to ask yourself, why the big yank? If this thing isn't going to do anything, why are we bothering with it?
Well, and some groups had some legitimate concerns, including the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which is Mike Ferris and colleagues, and they got the homeschoolers up in arms, and they made lots of phone calls to the United States Senate. So did many of the Tea Party groups. But basically, their concern was, it was kind of encapsulated by Senator Mike Lee of Utah, who basically said that, wait a minute, first of all, saying that we're going to create international standards could erode U.S. sovereignty. And we shouldn't address that during a lame duck session of Congress. I guess if we're going to give away sovereignty, we got to do it during a full session, Chuck. I'm just backhanding Mike Lee a little bit. He needs to be more careful about how he says it. But he says that the treaty would threaten the rights of parents in the United States to, quote, determine the best education, treatment, and care for their disabled children. And I think he's absolutely right. I've seen a state-level bill that was brought forth by some liberals who some conservatives signed on to, and thankfully I went around and talked to all these conservatives and got them to pull their names from the bill or to say they wouldn't support it if it came out of committee, that would basically say if you didn't give your child, quote-unquote, adequate medical treatment or adequate education as defined by those people who are writing the bill, which would be defined by the UN in this case, then your children could be taken away from you. So I think that Mike Ferris and HSLDA had a very valid concern with this.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, Barry, this is about control of children. Let's not kid ourselves. The state wants control of children, and that includes international bodies. When I say the state, I'm thinking in broader terms than just the state of Ohio, the United States government. I'm thinking international bodies want to have control of what your children do, what they learn, their diet.
Yes.
Every form of, essentially, they want to proclaim that they are the owners of your child. Well, Barry, as Christians, we know even we don't own our children. They are Christ's children. They are given to us as stewards of bringing them up in the word of faith. This idea that you think you own your children. No, I don't. I think I have been entrusted with them by God.
Yeah, indeed.
And in fact, what the UN wants to have and the United States government want to have, and some in state, not all, but some in state government want to have, is to proclaim that ownership, that the children really belong to the state.
Well, that's their whole point, that children belong to the state. And that's absolutely untrue. But, Chuck, there were 8 Republicans in the United States Senate who voted in favor of this mess of a UN treaty. Now, thankfully, a couple of those people are going to be out of the United States Senate as of the end of December. Those people are, obviously, Richard Lugar of Indiana, who's gone, Olympia Snow of Maine, her compadre Susan Collins, also of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Scott Brown of Massachusetts, you know, the Tea Party favorite, or at least used to be a Tea Party favorite, John Barrasso of Wyoming, Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire, and, drumroll please, not a surprise, boom, John McCain of Arizona.
If there's a wrong side to be on one of these votes, you will always find McCain, Collins, Snow, usually Lugar, almost always Scott Brown, Murkowski, and it's a real shame Lisa Murkowski got that job back.
Yes, it is.
They got rid of her, and she pin-hooked her way back in. And frankly, losing Scott Brown, so what? Now, I'm looking at the clock, and Barry, guess what?
We are out of time.
We are out of time. So, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.